must have observed how hard the trip has been on my body, despite my best efforts to hide it. It would be a lie to say that my stomach didn't turn with dread when Ma mentioned the forest. I feel as though I'm about to fall apart. I expect Ma to scold Emily and punish her. That's certainly what she would have done to me if I had been so bold. But instead, she just turns her back to grab Hannah and mumbles something about doing what we please until it's time to prepare lunch. Upset at being picked up so suddenly, Hannah thrashes and screams against Ma's body. Ma hums a low, gentle tune over and over and over until the baby calms enough to press her face into Ma's throat to feel the vibrations. "Thank you, sister," I whisper to Emily after I know Ma can't hear us. "I really appreciate..." "Why are you thanking me?" my sister says, then starts walking toward Joanna and Charles. Emily calls out to them, wants to play with them, wants to get away from me. "I said that my body was hurting, and I meant it." If Ma notices that Emily's running and tagging with the children seems inconsistent with her woeful claim, she doesn't mention it. I think that she's reached her limit for the day already, all before it's even gotten a chance to begin. I mourn my Ma's former happy self and wander away so that there's less opportunity for her to pay attention to me and notice my belly. I thought I would be braver by now. I thought that with time I'd grow more ready for my Ma and Pa to know about the baby. But I find myself just as afraid now as I was the day I realized I was with child. "I can't let them find out about this baby. I just can't. Oh, how I wish it could all go away." I make my way around the side of the peeling cabin, inspecting it with disgust, terrified at the idea of giving birth here. I wonder again if I'll even survive the labor. Does dwelling on such morbid things make them more likely to happen in the future? Is praying for death blasphemous? I'm removed from my thought when I round the back end of the cabin and see something sticking up through the grass, a cast-iron well pump. The new cabin has water access. It wouldn't be working now after being abandoned for so long, but maybe Pa can repair it once he gets back from that settlement. I step forward to inspect the well pump for any irreversible damage, and the smile from my discovery fades. The grass and weeds directly around the pump have been torn away, and by the looks of it, somewhat recently. I take the pump handle in my hand and pull it up before pushing down. Cold water pours from the open spout and splashes into the dirt. Someone has been to this cabin lately. "Ma?" I call around the corner, waving my hand. She makes her way over, careful to stay far enough from the cabin that Hannah won't scream in reaction to the smell. "Come look at this!" "Praise the Lord!" Ma gushes when she sees the well pump. She wipes the sweat from her forehead with her sleeve, and Hannah lets out a short yell. "Pa can get that in working order in no time!" "That's just the thing, Ma," I say, and lean forward to grab the iron handle again. I pump it, and more water rushes out. "It's already working." "That's wonderful!" Ma cries, smiling for the first time in weeks. "What an improvement over hauling the rain barrel back and forth from the creek on the mountain, right?" She doesn't seem the least bit suspicious, or even curious as to how or why the well pump is working so well. "Someone's been using this pump," I say slowly. "Isn't that a bad sign? Doesn't that mean that maybe this property is spoken for?" Ma looks at me as though I am not speaking a language she understands. "You're asking if it's a bad thing that we found fresh water in the middle of this inferno of a flatland. Amanda, there isn't a soul to be seen around here for miles. It's just a blessing, is all. Nobody lives here. How could they? The inside of the..." That's when someone steps out from behind the corner of the cabin. Since the figure is far too tall to be one of the children, my instinct wants to assume that it's Emily. I open my mouth to tell her about the well pump when I realize that it isn't Emily at all. There is a boy with tanned leather trousers and a wide-brimmed hat standing in the grass, staring at us, unblinking. He is holding a shotgun, and his hands are shaking. 8. One of the few things that Pa taught me about guns is that you don't hunt with a shotgun. You hunt with a rifle, which is used for accurate long-range control, the only type of gun that Pa owns. Shotguns have a more distinct and gruesome purpose, short-range annihilation. You use the shotgun when you want to take something's head off. The boy's hands are still trembling. Ma gasps. Please, she says, while Hannah presses her face into Ma's chest. The baby's features relax in fascination as she absorbs the thud of Ma's heartbeat. My children! Inside of me, there is a terrible sort of mix. There is the panicking pulse of fear for our lives, but then there is also this hope, a strange hope, a morbid hope, that perhaps I won't have to see Ma's face when she finds out about Henry after all. Won't have to endure the slaps to my face that Pa would carry out with a heavy hand. Hope that perhaps I won't burn like this for eternity after my head is misted into oblivion. I won't shoot you, the boy says suddenly, as if he's only just now making that decision, as if he had to struggle with it. He takes a deep breath and glances to the window of the cabin. I'm so sorry to have scared you. I was just shocked to see anybody here, that's all. My name is Ezekiel Jacobson, but my pa calls me Zeke. Where did you come from? I ask. Do you live here? Zeke looks in disgust at the peeling bark of the cabin's logs, the cracking and crumbling of the clay in between the weeds around the bottom edges. Of course not, he replies. Haven't you looked inside? Of course, Ma says, her hand over her stomach. We've only just arrived to settle here. We didn't know anyone had claimed the land. My husband, Edmund, should be back any minute now. Ma is still afraid of the boy with the shotgun. She's probably wondering, as I am, why he's not holding a rifle instead, if he were hunting. By his reaction to the sight of us, it almost feels as though he was expecting somebody. Somebody else. This land isn't claimed, ma'am, Zeke says, his eyes shifting to the ground. My pa and I live in those woods to the south. Our cabin is only about a mile or so into the trees, so we're about 2 miles total from here. We've just been running the well pump, is all. My pa, he wouldn't be too happy at the idea of losing access to it. He's a doctor, and... The children scream from where they play in the front clearing, and Zeke looks quickly over his shoulder toward the sound. His grip around the gun tightens. How many of you are there?
7 total, including Edmund, Ma says quietly, still eyeing the shotgun. She shifts her weight. Listen, I'm sure we could come to an agreement regarding the water.
Zeke realizes now that my Ma is still terrified of him. He sees her looking at his gun. He sees how hard she is trying to hold it together, and his eyes widen in surprise.
Oh, no, ma'am, he says and slowly slides the gun into a holster on his hip.
His hands have stopped trembling.
I promise I am not here to do you any harm. I was just coming to gather some water, like I said.
Just then, Emily rounds the corner of the cabin, oblivious to the presence of the danger.
Ma, the children are starting to ask for something to eat. Should I?
That's when she sees Zeke. She takes a step back, her mouth open in a tiny O.
Who is this?
Where's your bucket? I say to the boy, ignoring my sister's question. You said you were coming to gather water, but you don't have anything to put it in. Zeke blushes at the sight of Emily. Now that he's not carrying the shotgun, I'm able to see that he looks to be about her age.
Wasn't there one next to the pump?
What water? Emily says. What pump?
She spots the cast iron well pump behind me.
Oh!
There wasn't any bucket, I say. I do not want to let it go. I want to know who he was looking for, or who he was expecting.
You said your pa is a doctor,
Ma asks, suddenly interested now that the gun is put away.
How many people are there in your family?
Zeke frowns at the question. He sticks his hands into his pockets.
It's just my pa and me, ma'am. But he's a doctor, yes. He travels to Elmwood twice a week to see if anyone needs fixin'.
Do you think he'd be willing to examine my baby? Ma says. Her eyes are lit up, desperate at the opportunity, more alive than I've seen them in months. I was ill when I had her. It caused her to be born blind and deaf, but there weren't any real doctors on our mountain. And all I want is for someone official to tell me that she isn't in pain, that she's scared but adjusting, that she'll be all right. She cuts off as if there is a lump in her throat. Her eyes are glassy.
Of course, Zeke says gently. I'll tell him about your baby as soon as I get home. You never mention your names, ma'am, just that your husband's name is Edmund.
Susan Verner, Ma says and motions to the baby on her hip. This is Hannah, and my daughters, Amanda and Emily. Zeke smiles at Emily.
Lovely name, miss.
Emily grins, causing a wave of mild irritation to rise within me. She ought to be careful, that sister of mine. She has no idea what she could be getting herself into. The younger ones out front are Joanna and Charles, Emily says. Her voice is different than usual, smoother, more deliberate. Is she flirting? They'd better cut it out unless they want Ma to catch on to their little connection. A breeze brings the stench of the cabin into my nostrils for just a moment, and my stomach turns.
How are you planning on living here, if you don't mind me asking?
Zeke's attention is back to Ma.
This place, it isn't fit for anyone. It hasn't been for years. Nobody really comes out here to...
What happened inside? Ma asks. Do you or your pa know? We thought that maybe someone had slaughtered a horse or ox in the cabin. Zeke doesn't say anything for a moment. He just looks to the window of the cabin again. I want to mention the bucket once more just to show that I am aware of his lie. It takes a liar to know one, maybe, but all I know is that he did not come here to collect water.
We're not sure,
he finally replies. Ma sighs in disappointment.
It's been like this for as long as I can remember.
My husband is going to repair the floor, Ma says. Among other things. Zeke smiles darkly.
Is he really going to be back any minute, or were you just saying that because you thought I was going to hurt you?
Emily and Ma laugh at the remark, but I don't. Zeke's smile at their reaction fades when he sees my face.
There should have been a big bucket by the pump, he says again. I left it here last time I came.
Strange, I say and cross my arms. I hope he can tell that I don't believe him. The barrel of the shotgun glitters in the sun as the boy in the wide-brimmed hat shifts his weight. Strange indeed.
Tomorrow I'll bring my pa back with me to take a look at Hannah, he says to Ma, and she thanks him gratefully.
From the front end of the cabin comes the sound of Charles yelling at Joanna, something about cheating and being rude, and Ma excuses herself to go see to them.
I'll bring my horse with me, too, Zeke says once she's gone, so I can carry more water.
How often do you come to use the pump? Emily asks. Will we be seeing you around often, Zeke?
His name sounds ridiculous on her tongue. I want to take a paring knife and cut it out like a growth before the infection spreads, before it gets to her brain.
Has your pa ever delivered a baby? I ask, partly because I genuinely want to know, and partly because I want to remind Emily what sort of things can come from flirtations and coy smiles. Has she forgotten about me? Don't interrupt, sister, Emily says playfully, even though I know just as well as she does that she's trying to shove my question aside. Zeke lights up even more at the sound of her giggle. You can ask the doctor yourself tomorrow.
Well, I used to come every day, Zeke says, ignoring me. I like the fresh air and exercise, truthfully, but now that there are people living here, I'll increase my load so that I only have to come a few times per week. Although, if you'd like, maybe we can arrange for me to come and tell you all some spooky stories sometime.
I see. My sister is still smiling. Well, I must admit that sounds like fun. I think about the time a boy tried to win me over with a scary story and all that came from it. My hand rests over my belly and I give Zeke a dirty look. I must not allow him to hurt Emily.
Amanda? Emily?
Ma calls from the front of the cabin, and I am relieved.
I need you both now, please. Thank you for introducing yourself, Zeke.
The children peer out to inspect the stranger from behind Ma's skirts. You're hiding something, I think as I watch the boy tip his hat to Emily with a wink, and I won't forget it.
It was a pleasure, ma'am.
Zeke starts walking back toward the forest, his hand resting on the handle of the shotgun, and Emily and I go toward the front of the cabin to help Ma. At the last minute, I decide to look back. Zeke has stopped walking and is staring at the cabin. When he sees me looking, he waves. I don't return the gesture, and his hand freezes in the air. When I look again a few minutes later, he's gone. 9. Seeing Zeke with Emily, how he looked at her, how she liked it, floods my mind with memories of the postboy in the mountains and how we started out. You must have seen some interesting places in your travels, I said to Henry after the third or fourth time we were together. We were sprawled over the blanket, naked still from our pleasure trip, and I rested my forehead lightly against the side of his shoulder. Tell me what it's like to be a postboy. The forest seemed hyperactive that day. Birds chirped and squirrel feet scattered as the creek trickled with an invigorating intensity somewhere behind us. Henry moved a piece of hair away from my face, and I decided that this was the way I wanted to view life forever, as a vibrant springtime earth that kept all of its darkness hidden in caves and expressed its spirit through colorful patches of flowers and fawns that wobbled determinedly on their new legs.
I might know a few tales, Henry said with a wicked grin and curled the end of my hair with his finger. I know a ghost story that just so happens to be real. Maybe I'll tell you for a kiss.
I giggled, intoxicated by the sunshine and his love, and pressed my lips over his with eager execution.
That was lovely, he said after we were through, and leaned back down to face the sky. And most definitely earned itself a spooky story.
I used to tell Joanna and Charles scary tales about the mountain, of a cloaked woman who would lure settlers away into the trees only to harvest their eyeballs for her bird, who could see the future and would whisper it into her ear. That was before they were too nervous to play with me, or tell stories with me, or let anyone watch over them besides Ma or Emily. I missed them ever so, missed being close with them. The creature had taken that away from me.
Amanda? Henry said, looking at me instead of the sky now. Are you all right, my love?
I realized for the first time that my clenched hand was wrapped around the edge of the blanket, curled into a trembling half-fist. Dirt clung to my rigid fingertips, filled the space beneath my nails. I dropped the blanket. Of course, I said with a little laugh. The devil took your soul, I thought. It climbed inside of you. It's never going away. It's never going away. I frantically wiped the dirt from my hands, then lay back down beside Henry. I was just thinking about how much I enjoy scary stories. Please do tell.
Well, he started, and I was back in the embrace of springtime again. During a recent travel run to a settlement very far away from here, an old man in the saloon told me that whenever the behavior of their children was getting out of hand, he'd tell them the legends of the local ghost.
Is it a nasty ghost? I smiled against the skin of his shoulder, not feeling afraid at all as his fingers moved around mine. Those are the ones I like best. Those poor children, though. They shouldn't have to be scared into acting good.
Isn't everybody, though? Henry said. I thought it was quite clever.
Well, what did this ghost do to people? Or, I'm assuming, children, if that's who the stories were for.
I'll tell you about it if you let me. He laughed. The ghost was the very nasty type, as it turns out. There were some tales of people going mad from it, all of which, of course, could be confirmed, according to the old man. One woman cut off the heads of her children and sewed them to the tops of scarecrows.
Oh, my, I whispered. How very dreadful.
Yes, he agreed. Even worse was the fact that the scarecrows came alive at night to comb the fields for food. Horses from nearby cabins went missing, and even a few children.
Those don't sound like any ghosts I have ever heard of before, I said. How perfectly terrifying.
It wasn't multiple ghosts doing it exactly, Henry explained. It was the land itself. It had been soured by an infection of constant panic, hate, and fear. The man said that in some places, the land can come out to play through the living. It can even make folks go mad.
How hopeless, I said, then yawned as I arched my back. And how fortunate that you were able to make the post delivery without getting your head cut off.
That's the strangest part of all, Henry said, his voice suddenly flat. I had to camp out a few times on my way out of the area, and each time, I could have sworn I heard children giggling in the night.
You're full of scut, I proclaimed, nudging his leg with my knee. No lying.
It wasn't a lie, Henry swore. There was something funny about that place.
Maybe there was something funny about your brain.
Well, that would have fit the story, all right, he said with a laugh. Anyway, I got out of there real fast.
No more talk of headless children. I sat up and reached for my dress. You may walk me home now, although you won't be able to come too close, of course. If Emily sees you...
Apologies, my angel.
Henry cut me off, his voice different than it was a few moments before.
But I don't have the time to spare. I'll be riding off once you're dressed.
I knew immediately that it was a lie. When my hands were on his naked body, he had all the time in the world.
You didn't mention a time restraint before, I said softly and slid the dress over my head. No pouting, Henry commanded. I shall be back again when the month is half through. Then again on the first of the next. Check for my signal.
All right, I agreed with a sigh. I stood up, buttoned my dress, and shook my hair out before rebraiding it to look as neat as a pin. Farewell, then, I suppose.
You know I cannot wait,
Henry said as he hopped up, still naked, and pulled me toward him for more kisses.
And I'll be thinking about how sweet your lips taste until...
Do you love me? I asked. Lacing my fingers together behind his back. Like you said earlier?
Of course I love you.
To hear him say it while I was clothed filled me with a profound sense of hope, an unexpected but welcomed result in addition to how much I enjoyed myself with him physically. Besides pleasure, Henry now also offered me hope for a future, and love, somewhere so far away from that cursed mountain.
What on earth could ever keep me away?
Ten. Pa still isn't back by nightfall, and I become convinced that he is gone forever. I make myself sick with worry all through supper and cleanup, even though Ma doesn't seem too worried herself. She sings hymns to us from the back of the wagon as Emily and Joe and I lie in the short-cut grass around the fire. Her voice light and sweet and heaven to the ears. For the first time since we arrived, I am not afraid of the snakes. I can't remember the last time she sang to us all. It's as if her excitement about the doctor coming to inspect Hannah tomorrow has animated her back to life. What is she hoping to hear from him exactly? While I do not know, I'm happy to have a little piece of my Ma back, even if it will just be for the night. My sisters are asleep within two songs, but I am awake long after Ma's voice fades into the night air, taking in the enormity of the starry sky, while I wait for Pa's return. I lie on my back, remembering the boy with the shotgun, remembering Henry. Missing Emily. When there comes a sound from somewhere in the pitch dark behind me, lacing itself into the air along with the popping embers of the fire. At first, I think I'm imagining it, but as my heart continues to pound, it only gets louder. It is the sound of an infant crying, and it is coming from inside the cabin. The sky goes from black to a blended purple-red in a single blink, and the sound of Rocky returning with Pa, pulling the loaded wooden cart behind them, jars me awake. I sit up, confused, and look to the cabin. I can't hear the baby anymore. I must have been dreaming. Pa tells us that he hasn't stopped for sleep since he left yesterday morning, and he talks about the settlement as he takes Rocky's saddle off and rubs his legs down with remedy oil. The place is just where the map said it would be, Pop says, and although it was a little smaller than he imagined, the general store in town is well stocked and the owner has agreed to trade and buy homemade furniture from Pa, from wood he'll gather in the forest. No more furs, he says while he eats a slab of salted pork and ground wheat bread. It'll be a nice change, steadier. Trees don't exactly hide when they see you coming. I owed them quite a few pieces for getting the flooring materials up front, of course. He takes a swig of water from his canteen. They also told me that there was someone living in the forest. Yes, Ma says eagerly, watching him eat. A young man wandered onto the property yesterday to use the well pump. He said his father is a doctor.
What do you mean he came to use our pump? Pa brushes a few crumbs from his beard. Why would he need to do that?
Ma explains how the Jacobsons have been keeping the well in working order, then tells him that the doctor is coming to inspect Hannah later today. Pa seems aggravated by the entire story. We mustn't start a fuss over sharing the well pump, Ma insists. If it weren't for them, it's possible we wouldn't be able to use it by now at all. The boy said the cabin has been like this for as long as he can remember.
I don't care what the boy had to say.
Pa grumbles as he lies down on his blanket in the grass.
And having a doctor look at Hannah won't change a thing, Susan.
He sets his hat over his face, ending the conversation. I think of how relaxed Ma was last night, how light and peaceful she seemed in her songs. But that's all gone now, lost to Pa's cruel tone and the sound of the baby screaming from the wagon. I offer to wash the breakfast dishes so I don't have to bear witness to the pain in her face. In the late morning, after he's had a chance to sleep off a little of his trip to the settlement, Pa opens the door to the cabin, untouched since our arrival, and begins walking back and forth from the well pump to splash soapy water over the blood-soaked log walls inside the cabin to prepare them for the draw knife. Ma cleans inside of the window to let the sun through and encourage the flies to disperse, which they eventually do for the most part. She smashes the spider nests in the corners of the cabin with a shovel, then whisks the webbing away with a broom.
Somebody killed an ox in there?
Charles pulls on my skirt while we watch from near the doorway.
That is disgusting.
I wonder if I'll ever be able to erase the sight of all the blood from my mind. So much blood. More than I've ever seen in my life, even more than last winter. I take my brother's hand and we walk together to the wagon where Joanna and Emily are sitting in the shade. Somewhere in the bed, Hannah snores softly. Emily doesn't acknowledge my presence. Don't worry, I smile weakly at Charles. Pa is getting it all nice and fixed up for us.
I heard Ma murmuring something about it when she didn't know I could hear her.
Joanna says matter-of-factly and straightens the dress on the corncob doll she received for her birthday.
She said the cabin was rotted. She's just very stressed, Joe,
Emily assures her from the top of the wagon, where she sits chewing on dried apricots.
The house isn't rotted. It was unclean, that's all. Pa will finish the floor before we know it.
She pops another apricot into her mouth.
Don't eat all of those!
Joanna whines and reaches her little hands up to Emily.
I want some, too.
Emily rolls her eyes, but drops a small handful of the spongy orange discs into Joe's hands anyway. Share with Charles, she commands when she spies Joanna stuffing them all into her pocket.
They're for everybody.
She doesn't offer any to me, and I don't ask.
When is that doctor supposed to arrive?
Pa asks again while he pours a bucket of water from the pump over his sweating head. He presses a dry cloth over his dripping beard, replaces his hat, and looks toward the forest line. I told you already that the boy wasn't specific, Ma says. He only said that he'd be back today with his father.
There's a doctor coming?
Charles pipes up from where he and Joanna sit on the half-broken fence, chewing on their apricots.
Why, is Hannah sick?
No, son. Pa stretches his back and looks back at the cabin in exhaustion. Your ma just can't go on being happy with her life until a doctor tells her to, I suppose. Shocked silence from everyone, including the children. Ma's mouth is turned down as she beats at the weeds with the rake. Why does Pa have to make it so much harder for her always? It's as if he holds last winter against her, blames her for getting a fever and cooking away Hannah's sight and sound in the womb. It's as if he feels that she deserves to hurt over Hannah, forever. Again, I find myself wishing that my baby sister hadn't lived through the delivery. The guilt blooms in my stomach, makes me sick, or maybe that's just real sickness from my own baby. The Lord works in mysterious ways, all right. Wish a baby dead? Get another one in return as punishment. This is my reckoning. Zeke arrives with his pa about an hour before the sun is to set, right around the time the massive sky is changing from blue to orange. They ride a fat horse with a gray body and black mane. Ma sees him coming from the distance and begins to ready some water for them all to drink. I can see in her movements that she is still upset about Pa's words. I feel her anger in my pit and wonder if it is affecting the baby in any way. Does the little soul know that I don't want it? Can it tell? When the Jacobsons near the cabin, Joanna and Charles scurry into the back of the wagon out of last-minute shyness. I can't help but smile at the sight of their small heads poking up from the sides to get a better look at our neighbors. "Hello, Verners!" The man who I assumed to be Dr. Jacobson calls with a friendly wave, then hops from his horse to gratefully accept a cold drink of water from Ma. He is tall and bald with no facial hair, and a pair of wire-rimmed spectacles sits on his nose. "Thank you, my dear. It is much too hot for my taste today."
"Isn't it, though?" Ma says and fixes a misplaced curl on Hannah's forehead. "Our mountain was so much cooler, even in the middle of summer."
"I can only fantasize," the doctor says and shakes Pa's hand with a smile. "Frederick Jacobson's the name, sir, and this is my son Ezekiel." "Hello, doctor," Pa says. "I appreciate you coming over to introduce yourselves and, you know, appease my wife."
Beside him, Ma gazes unblinking into Hannah's face. The corner of her mouth twitches.
"She's had a very hard time ever since last winter." "I am aware of the circumstances," Dr. Jacobson says curtly, his smile unwavering. "Zeke informed me upon his return yesterday. I am happy to inspect the child."
He steps boldly in front of Pa, causing him to take a step back. I look in surprise at Emily to gauge her reaction at the sight of our big, tough Pa being intimidated by a bald man with glasses, but she isn't even listening. For all Emily can look at is Zeke. She steps over to stand closer to the wagon, but really it's to be closer to him, and when Zeke sees me notice, I could swear his eyes narrow ever so slightly. The doctor peers over Ma's shoulder and at the baby.
"And this must be little Hannah," he says softly, his mouth just a few inches away from her ear. "What a gorgeous child she is."
"Thank you," Ma says. Behind her, Zeke says something to Emily under his breath, and she laughs into her hand. She seems to be fine some of the time, but other times she will scream and kick for hours. It has made me wonder if perhaps she's in pain or needing something from me that I don't understand. Ma's voice cracks at the last word, and she clears her throat.
"The human body is a marvel," the doctor replies, his tone suddenly very serious.
He cautiously slides his fat pink finger into the baby's hand.
"She may seem as though she's in pain, but the fits are much more likely to be a result of her frustration. Hannah is different from most, so naturally your approach must be different as well. You mustn't doubt yourself, for you are the mother."
I wait for Hannah to scream at the touch of a stranger. She can't even stand it when Pa or me or one of the children try to handle her, so I know the doctor is in for an ear-splitting surprise.
I think Ma is even more shocked than I am when Hannah tightens her grip around the finger and reaches out to explore his arm eagerly.
"What a little sweetheart!"
Dr. Jacobson exclaims and plucks the baby from Ma's arms as if she is nothing more than a doll.
She doesn't seem to mind newcomers at all, hm?
Ma's jaw drops open. Pa looks irritated at his daughter's warmth, and it's easy to understand why. I don't think I've ever seen Hannah react so lovingly to him as she does Dr. Jacobson.
Wow,
I hear Joanna say to Charles from the back of the wagon, and the doctor seems to have heard her as well.
What do we have here?
He calls to the wagon.
A couple of eavesdropping hideaways, huh?
Dr. Jacobson balances Hannah on his hip and strides over to the wagon. He shoves his free hand into his pocket, and when it comes out, there are two maple candy sticks clutched inside.
If the children are hiding, whoever shall I give these sweets to?
My brother and sister tumble out of the back of the wagon in seconds, tripping over each other as they reach eagerly for the sweets.
Thank you, sir,
Charles says politely and jumps up and down in excitement with Joanna.
Ma, may we eat them now? Oh, please, Ma, can't we have them?
On the rare occasion that Pa would bring us sweets from the mountain colony, Ma would always force us to wait until after supper was eaten and cleaned up before indulging. The doctor's nature seems to have the same effect on her that it does on Hannah, though, because she offers the children a smile and nods to show that she will allow it. The wrappers are torn off in an instant, two swift crinkles of waxed paper followed by the sound of the children sucking eagerly at the maple sticks. Zeke and Emily wander around the yard talking about the heat and the forest and Lord knows what else. The doctor pats the top of Charles's dark curly head before turning to the camp set up in front of our cabin.
Sleeping outside, are you?
He asks and sets Hannah down in the clearing. He watches intently as she paws around his boots. The doctor moves his foot very carefully away to the side and observes as Hannah feels her way to follow it.
I can't imagine why anybody would choose to settle at this particular cabin.
Yes, well, Pa grumbles and shoots a glance back to the cabin. There are piles of soap suds pinked with blood oozing from beneath the edges.
There was a little more work involved than I expected, but it'll be good as new before long. It's a nice big place.
The doctor frowns at the cabin and doesn't inquire further. His face doesn't look all that different from how Zeke's did yesterday when he kept stealing glances at the window. I think about the infant cry I thought I heard in the night and shiver.
I see.
Dr. Jacobson remarks simply and continues setting up little tests for Hannah. First he creates a small trail of pebbles that lead to a soft, fluffy rabbit's foot that has been preserved as a token, produced from his pocket. Then he stomps his foot near the first pebble to create a vibration. Hannah immediately feels around the area and finds the trail. She has the rabbit's foot in seconds and rubs it happily over the skin on her face while she coos at the sensation.
Remarkable,
Dr. Jacobson exclaims and adjusts the wire spectacles sliding down his nose.
Such a smart little one.
In ignorance, one would assume that a child with such a condition wouldn't be able to get past the confusion enough to sort her own thoughts out, let alone follow a puzzle of pebbles. But she has adjusted seamlessly, as all of God's creatures do, I suppose.
That's right, Pa says, looking at Ma. That is absolutely right.
Despite the praise, Ma looks uncomfortable with Dr. Jacobson's words.
The confusion has settled a bit over time, I suppose, Ma says and bends down to rub the baby's head. And the anger, too. Still, though, I have to admit that I've never seen her take to somebody so quickly.
The doctor looks confused by this comment.
You don't say,
he says and looks into my eyes for a moment, then pause, as if searching for a reason as to why the baby would hate us.
Well, she's certainly a splendid child. I'd like to come check up on her progress from time to time, if you wouldn't mind.
Of course, Ma says. That'd be very kind of you, doctor. Thank you.
Pa sighs. The sky has darkened several shades in the short amount of time Dr. Jacobson has been here, and he seems to notice at the same time that I do.
Better get back to the woods before dark,
the doctor says, and replaces the hat on his bald head.
We need to get our supper started if we want to fall asleep at a decent hour, Zeke?
Zeke nods and heads back to the horse after one more glance at Emily.
I'll see you all soon when I come for water in a few days, he says. And don't forget that you promised to meet up for some scary stories.
That sounds like such fun.
Charles beams through a smile that is sticky with maple.
We love scary stories. Thank you for the candy,
Joanna cries and hugs the doctor around his middle.
Come back any time.
Dr. Jacobson laughs and thanks Ma again for the water.
Please don't hesitate to call upon us if you ever need a helping hand.
Same, Pa says, and shakes the doctor's hand.
Let me know if you ever need a new piece of furniture.
Will do, Dr. Jacobson calls over his shoulder as he mounts the gray horse with Zeke. With the click of his tongue and a quick turn, they are riding toward the woods.
See you around, neighbors.
We watch in silence while the doctor rides away with Zeke. In a few minutes, they've disappeared into the trees and the winds of the prairie whistle through the grasses as Ma starts to prepare supper.
What a nice man,
she remarks in an empty voice.
I wonder what happened to his wife, the boy's mother. So sad that they only have each other now.
I didn't like that doctor too much, Pa says. He was rude.
Hannah seemed to love him,
Emily says. Her back is turned toward them, but I can see the suppressed half-smile bloom over her face as she tosses a few more sticks into the fire.
I think Ma's right. It's sad that they only have each other. We should invite them for supper every now and then.
Wouldn't that just tickle your fancy?
I murmur under my breath. Emily glares.
I can't wait for Zeke to tell us scary stories at the fire pit.
Joanna claps excitedly, and Charles follows suit.
I bet he knows some really good ones.
Just as long as it's nothing satanic, Ma says, and Pa agrees. When dinner has passed and it's time to go to bed, I pray to God that I don't dream of the crying baby inside the cabin again.
Just give my heart a rest, please.
I toss and turn nervously until I fall asleep in an obscure position, with my arms resting above my head and my fingertips grazing the dirt of the prairie. In the dead of night, when I feel a tiny hand wrap itself around my wrist, I refuse to open my eyes. It's only a piece of grass in the breeze, I lie to myself, still half asleep. There is nothing wrong here. There is nothing wrong with me.
11. What between two sisters can stay bitter for this long?
Ma wonders aloud suddenly one afternoon after Hannah has fallen asleep in the wagon. And be ye kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. That is from the book of Ephesians, Amanda. I continue to rake the dirt of any rocks or dead grass or weeds, shoving it all outside the clearing of the newly maintained yard. In just a week, we've managed to get rid of all the weeds, and 4 days ago, Pa took a break from rebuilding the floor of the cabin to repair and complete the fence. I haven't been inside the cabin since our arrival, but I can say with confidence that at least the yard looks much better. Forgiving one another, I think, and bend down painfully to uproot an especially stubborn stone with my hands. If only she knew just how much of a sinner I really am. Talk of forgiveness wouldn't flow from her mouth with such warmth. It certainly hasn't flown from Emily's. There is no quarrel, I answer simply and finish with the rake. My body feels strained, too strained almost, and I wonder at what point I won't be able to do hard labor anymore. What if that moment comes before Ma and Pa notice my belly? I'd have to tell them then, actually physically say the words, I am with child. The idea causes the back of my neck to break out into even more of a sweat. I make my way to the pile of smooth, round stones that sit before the front door. Ma's had the children collecting them for days, rewarding them with sugar lumps from the supply pile to encourage them to make haste. Today is finally the day when enough stones have been gathered, and now that we've finished preparing the clearing, we can begin to line the area with them. Emily is a ways beyond the clearing, playing tag with Joanna and Charles and keeping them busy while we work.
I will pretend that I don't know you are lying to me, Ma remarks, and goes over to check on the baby.
After she's confirmed that Hannah is still sleeping, she motions for me to bring the rocks over to her.
No lies, Ma.
I kneel and gather the stones in my skirt, then walk over to her and carefully allow them to spill over the freshly raked soil at her feet. We crouch, side by side, and begin lining the raked portion of the clearing with the stones. After the line is no more than 5 feet long, Hannah stirs in the back of the wagon and begins to yell.